Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's the final episode of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's big deal,
a glorious ending.
We lock up the doors, turn out the lights, get our cans of gasoline out, and burn this podcast down.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Lords of Waterdeep.
Will you dive right in or throw it off the deep end?
All this and much more on the final episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is, for one episode more, Game On with Cody and John. I am still Cody.
I'm still John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We are a podcast, for one episode more,
that's right,
about all kinds of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games.
After that, we will be a podcast about cooking tips, home decorating, and car maintenance.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm fine with that, sure.
Yes. Homemaking on, car maintenance on.
Painting
on.
Something like that. But sure. But for right now, we're going to still be about board games and card games. It's been another great couple weeks of gaming in the gaming capital of the world. How you doing, Cody?
I'm doing all right. It's bittersweet.
It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd get here. But
these microphones set up for the last
time. You can get these out of my house now.
That's true.
It's a happy day.
Yeah.
I get some closet space back.
So, you know, this is like any good show that's going off into the sunset, or like our show, what better way to end with a self-indulgent clip show, right?
Yes.
So what are we going to be talking about in this final episode of Game On?
Us. Well, more specifically, what we liked, what we got out of the show. For several weeks, we took your submissions on what you liked, so we're gonna give it right back to you and tell you what we enjoyed.
That's right. Are we going to do a top 11? It's like a top 11, right?
Yeah, more or less.
More or less. It's like a top 11 things that we enjoyed about making Game On with Cody and John. And you've endured, like, you know, four episodes of our final five of us waxing philosophic about this and that. So only one last show of that, and then, you know, and then no more.
That's right. But we're not going to leave people empty-handed. Even at the bitter end, we're going to give you a game review, a Buy, Try, or Deny, and its new hotness, of course.
That's what we've been all about, it seems. And I think a really fitting game for our final episode, Lords of Waterdeep, a really interesting mix of Euro-style mechanics and an American-style theme. So much in our show we've talked about the balance between those two things. And so it's a pretty good hybrid that we can go out on. So Lords of Waterdeep will have a review of that. We're going to have some special guest segments from some people that you probably know in the world of gaming. And, you know, we're just going to blow this whole thing up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as always, we're going to start off with a rundown. You ready?
Let's do it. All right, it is time for the rundown, but before we do that, it is time for our last confession to Father Dan at Myriad Games, John.
Well, you know, as we've said many, many times, our show is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere, and we just want to say some great word of thank you to Myriad Games for all the support that they've given us over a long time. I can't even remember exactly what episode they started sponsoring us, but it was very early on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been probably three or more years that they've been sponsoring our show and giving us support. And so we've built great friendships with Dan and Sarah and all the folks at Myriad and some of the regulars that go to those stores in New Hampshire. It's still, In all the time, even though they've been sponsoring us, it's the best game store that I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
And hands down. And so all the stuff that we've said in previous episodes, we'll say it once more. You know, if you're looking for a great, friendly, professional game store, look for one in your area. But if you don't have one, then Myriad Games can provide that service for you. They've got, you know, great service. They've got their MVP memberships. They've got some of the best and most professional folks in the business. We consider them to be great friends in addition to being sponsors. And, you know,
well
thanks
done.
Again for...
Well done, Myriad.
Yeah, very.
Well done. The so, game on hand clap.
We appreciate it very much. So, Myriad Games, MyriadGames.com.
So,
the final rundown.
We're going to be saying the final and the last thing about 86 more times.
Everybody's like, fast forward.
We got it. It's the last episode. Okay.
So the rundown. So Cody, what you been doing?
You know, it's sad. I should have played more games leading up to the final rundown because my rundown is very sparse.
Oh, me too. It is
very
sad.
Sparse.
That's the secret reason we're out of the show is that we're actually not going to be gamers anymore.
Yeah, we've actually taken up bowling. Board games aren't very popular. No. I did play a few games. I did travel to see my in-laws, and we busted out some tumbling dice, as we are wont to do.
Nice.
And the classic.
Oh, yeah.
Still the best. It's kind of hard to find right now. I don't know if it's between printings or
We actually had a listener who wrote in, and I'm not sure if we had a chance to write them back yet. Mm-hmm. So if we haven't, apologies for that. Here is your answer. He had written in and said, you know, when is this game going to be back in print? I actually don't know. And I didn't even know that it was hard to find until I got that email. And I went and looked on the internet at different game stores, and it says, yeah, out of print right now. So snatch a copy if you can. I know that there's like a Tumble and Dice Junior that's a smaller version, but I would wait, to see if it seems to be popular enough that they should be, reprinting it at some point.
Yeah, I would think so, but we will see.
So, keep your eye on the internet for that guy.
No. I also decided while I was up visiting to give Steam Rails to Riches another go.
The new one, right?
The Martin Wallace joint.
Not the Age of Steam.
Not Age of Steam, but just good old American Steam.
Okay.
The first time I played it, I really didn't like it, but I wanted to give it another whirl. And it was a little better the second time. I still think, this is going to be the equivalent of the train game episode. I'm sorry it never happened, train game fans.
Yeah. Here's the big reveal. We're not doing the train game episode. Sorry.
Maybe we'll do a super double special episode 3 years from now, and we'll just sneak it in the radar.
But don't wait up at night for that.
Don't wait up for it. So this is all you get. It's okay. I think I still prefer the Crayon Rails games like Empire Builder or Railways of the World, the card game, or something else. Steam's not really my cup of tea. And because it seems like all of Martin Wallace games is about trying to avoid getting so deep in debt or in poverty that it just crushes you. And
that is true. That one, Automobile, what's the other one? London. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. So
it's okay. It's not for me. I'm going to stick to Empire Builder, and I'd still like to try one of the 18XX games out.
Okay.
But yeah, sorry about that.
And I want to try Chicago Express.
That is a good one.
Now, the game on game day that's coming up, actually, by the time this show is released, it might have already happened, but not that we'll be doing a recap on it, sorry. But they were doing a no-ship math trade, which I'm very excited about, and that's one of the games that's in there is Chicago Express, and I'm going to hopefully be able to trade for that, because that's one that I really want. I've heard good things.
Other games I played, Tok Tok Woodman,
which
you gave to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's a great dexterity game, and it's just so dumb that it's fun. I mean, you're whacking this tree, and for some reason you want the bark and not the tree itself.
Right, you're not trying to chop the tree down. That's actually a fail condition, right?
Yeah, maybe Vassal can tell us. Maybe they do lumber differently in Korea, where they only the bark. The lumber itself, worthless.
That's right.
At the game on game night, I actually had a really light game night because it's pretty much whenever I ended a game, people were in the middle of other games, and it just I only ended up really playing one real game,
really,
and everything else I just kind of watched. It was fine.
What'd you play?
I played Citadels, one of your favorite games, of course.
I thought I saw you with Wiz War. Did you not play that?
No, we were going to set it up, and then
other things happened.
People wanted to play other stuff.
Ah, okay.
So it was fine. Citadels, I hadn't played in a while, and we played with six, I want to say. And,
cool.
And I really like that one. Citadel, still probably one of the best bang for your buck you can get out there from Fantasy Flight. I think it's like $25 for the game. Plays 3 to 8. Plays better with more people, I would say. But that one's just a hoot. I enjoy it. I know.
Boy, I dodged that bullet.
It's a fun game.
It's okay.
You need to try it again. I did get a chance to play War of the Ring a few days ago.
Jealous.
I know. My buddy Dare brought his copy down, and he has all the second edition, the nice big cards and all that.
Oh, he got the new edition?
He has the first edition, but got the upgrade pack.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Those cards are nice.
Oh, they are. I mean, because I'd played one game with the old cards and then another game with the new ones. It was like night and day. So my first game I played as the bad guy, as a Sauron, and I won pretty handily. I forget. Yeah, I think I won. I corrupted the the Ring Bearers, and I got them I don't think they got to Mordor. I think they were getting close, but my strategy there was just hammer the Fellowship early. I didn't go for a military victory right out of the gate. I just went after the Fellowship, and I did okay.
Cool.
This game I played the Fellowship, or the Free Peoples, and I decided to use that strategy kind of in reverse, because there's really two ways you can win. Each player can win. You can win by a military victory by taking over a certain number of strongholds or getting enough victory points, and that's different for each group. Or by, if you're the Free Peoples, either destroying the ring, getting it to Mount Doom and destroying it, or if you're Sauron, corrupting the Fellowship so much to where they lose. And I pretty much just focused all my efforts on that. I just put forth a token military effort enough to stop advances, and I got lucky with some cards and some dice rolls. And I ended up getting one step from winning the game and got corrupt on the very last draw.
Oh, wow.
So, great game. I don't know how I missed it for so long. I mean, I know it was out of print for a while, so yeah. I guess that explains it. But really fun game. And I'm not good at dudes on a map games, really. But this one's nice. The combat mechanics are they're not that complex, but they're complex enough to where if you know what you're doing, you'll get an advantage. I like the combat cards. I like that they're not kind of instant plays. I hate those gotcha cards, it's like, you know, you roll dice and you add up totals and then someone plays a card and adds two. And I just hate that. Yeah. That's one of the things Twilight Imperium I don't care for. War of the Ring, though, it's with the second edition, if you're an Ameritrash guy or a Tolkien guy or both, check it out because it ain't bad.
Ooh.
It ain't bad.
So I need to get I have that edition, the new edition. Got to get it to the table.
Yeah,
so.
We need to play.
Yeah.
That's all I got, actually.
That's it?
That's pitiful.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry.
No, because mine is going to be just as bad, if not worse. I think probably worse.
That's not good.
Last couple weeks, one of the main things that I think I've mentioned several times that I'm training right now for a half marathon that's coming up. It's the 500 Festival mini marathon. It's kind of associated with the Indy 500. It's the first week in May. So I'm training for that, and in preparation for that, I had signed up to do a 5K run in Bloomington, Indiana, which is about an hour south of Indianapolis, where Indiana University is.
Go Hoosiers!
And so it was the IU 5K and mini marathon, and so I did the 5K portion of it. So I've been spending a lot of my extra time just sort of training for that. Now, a 5K run isn't that big of a deal. It's 3.1 miles, but it's, as someone who's never been an athlete, never been a runner, it was a really important, I guess, milestone for me. So I did the race and I made it through the entire thing running. So that was excited about that. I was determined to make it through and not walk any of it. You know, Bloomington, Indiana, kind of a hilly city.
A little bit.
Goodness gracious. So that was, my time was not quite as good. So like I said, I've been doing a lot of running, a lot of that kind of stuff. So not as much time for gaming. So the game on game night, while Cody was playing Citadels and ping pong, I think I saw you being.
Oh yeah, I did play some ping pong.
I played a game of Lords of Waterdeep, which we're going to talk about in the buy, try, or deny segment coming up a little bit later. So I played a 5-player game of that. And then that, you know, took up more than half of the game night. And so after that, played a 4-player game of Ninjato,
which
we talked about a couple episodes ago. That's a really good game. Unfortunately, we didn't get all the way through the game. So
started that one a bit late, I thought.
Yeah, well, and because in my mind, the game seems like it's pretty simple. But when you explain it out, some of the stuff's a little bit non-intuitive. Because I think we mentioned in our review that you're kind of trying to manipulate things a little bit indirectly to get the points that you need. So... once we finally got the hang of it, it took a little while, and we went through the second scoring round. So we got a couple got a couple of squawks of people saying, "Well, I would have done my strategy different if I knew we were going to end early." So, but you know that happens. So.
I mean, it's our last episode, so I can do this. You know, it's like, what do you want to tell us? It's like, okay, we'll note it in the record book. I'll put a star by it.
No, this was RD, and RD was I think he was just saying that. Because he's a strategy guy, you know, and I think he just would have done things differently. He wasn't ticked off about it or anything.
I meant more the effing gamers that along and just squawk and get all, you know.
No, this wasn't him. I mean, they all came away from the game saying, hey, that was a really good game. Good, we got to get to this the table again so we can do a full game. But they all seem to think the strategy was pretty cool in it. Okay. So, plus shouting Banzai in the middle of the game. That's always fun. Yeah. Hate to say it, that is it.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
All that bowling.
Yeah, I haven't even played much with my kids. My son yesterday set up a giant HeroScape board in the middle of our bedroom, and it's just all over the floor because that's where a lot of my games are kept. It's in shelves there, so. And it's a really cool looking map. So, you know, we didn't get a chance to play the game on it, but I was like, we'll keep the map set up on the floor here.
Why didn't you just sleep on the couch or something?
What do you mean?
Oh, it was on the bedroom floor.
It's on the bedroom floor. So I had to kind of slide it over so we're not going to step on it or anything, but we're keeping the map because it's. And he even came up with like these different. Instead of just being, here's the map and we're going to play HeroScape, he has this whole like almost RPG-like thing that he set up. It seems like he's being like a GM because he said, all right, so here is like the obstacle course, Dad, and then you got to get over this bridge. And then once you get across the bridge, I'm looking at the other side of this bridge and he's got every single robot that's in my HeroScape collection. He's like, that's when the robots attack.
That's when the robots.
I'm like, oh, sweet. So it's almost like he set up a RPG scenario. Nice. So that's pretty fun. So that's going to be good. One game I'm interested in playing, despite our experience with Jabberjay, is I've heard decent things about the board game for Hunger Games, the District 12 board game.
Oh, see, I haven't.
Really?
Yeah, I heard it was okay. Like, everyone plays Katniss, apparently.
Oh, really?
That's kind of weird.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, did you see the movie?
No, still haven't seen it. Oh,
it's good.
Yeah,
it's really good, yeah.
I still haven't seen it yet.
I still think, and I'm going to... Last episode, I get to do these editorials.
You get to do it. Whatever. Just right. Let it go.
The series should have ended after the first book, and the movie should just end after the first movie. Let your imagination run wild.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of goes downhill from here. I think the second movie is going to get canned, because I'm not trying to do a lot of spoilers. It's so much like the first.
Wait, you mean get canned, like not get made?
Or? No, no, like kind of panned, I guess.
Oh, it won't get
panned
by
the critics, yeah. Just because it's like, well, they're just doing it again.
Yeah, well,
yeah, you know,
here's the problem. Yes. You want to know what the problem is?
What's the problem?
People like money.
Sure.
And
that's why The Hobbit is two movies.
Exactly.
The Hobbit is not a complicated story.
Right. It's like this. Well, the last Harry Potter book really, they could have done that in one movie.
Well, did you know that the last Hunger Games is going to be two movies?
You're kidding.
No, I heard it.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, The Hobbit's still the worst. Yeah. Like, if you can get Fellowship of the Ring in 1 3-hour movie,
yeah,
you can get The Hobbit in a 3-hour movie.
you can, it's like, yeah.
It's like you go, you get the ring, you come home. There's dwarves, you know. Yay.
Spoiler.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So okay. Well, I'd heard decent things about the because it's sort of worker placement. It's got people are complaining about is that it's got the Killer Bunnies mechanic in it. You know.
Oh, really?
Well, not it's sort of more like the Society of Architects mechanic at the very end where. There's an opportunity for you to do certain things, but the payment for doing that is you have to put your name into the hat for the tributes more times.
Okay.
And so then at the very end, you'd shuffle up all the cards, draw one, and whichever player gets picked, they automatically lose.
I don't mind that.
But I thought that was okay.
I don't mind it in Killer Bunnies just because for what it is. I mean, Killer Bunnies is such a 10-minute, you know, thing. Yeah, but. Yeah.
Unless you play with all the expansions, then it's a four-hour
when you're playing with
hell.
Mauve and Ice Blue or whatever.
Exactly. So this sounds like a Lux for Zoolander. Blue Steel, Mauve, Ice Blue. That's it.
Wow.
What about other geekery? Any like TV shows, movies, other stuff, books?
I finally got back into watching Mad Men.
Not exactly a geeky show. But
not exactly a geeky show, no.
But featuring a board gamer, famous board gamer, Rich, what's his name?
Sommer?
Rich Sommer, yeah. Who plays Harry Crane.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And now I wear a suit everywhere, and I smoke 3 packs a day, and I drink about a gallon of scotch.
And have promiscuous sex with anybody you can find, right?
Mr. Sade, that's Mistress on.
Hey. Oh, well, I've been watching some interesting TV shows myself. Now that I've got the new iPad,
uh-huh.
I've got my HBO Go hooked up to that guy. And so that one nice thing is, you know, there's all the current series like Game of Thrones, things like that. But all of the other series that HBO has done over the years are now on HBO Go. So I've never watched The Sopranos ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I might go back and I haven't watched any of it yet, but I could go back and watch any of that I want. I've always wanted to see the show The Wire. And I finally got to start watching that. That's really good. This new show that's been on a couple seasons, Boardwalk Empire. That's really good. And what's the other one?
Can I suggest a show for you?
Go ahead.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I know.
Second season.
I know.
Fantastic.
I'm about 2 episodes behind.
Stannis for Prez.
Does he have a beard?
No.
I always pictured Stannis with a beard. Does he have a beard in the... Like,
I think he's got like a really close crop beard as I cover my face for the...
Because that's the thing about Game of Thrones that I've always been impressed with is that when they cast the first season, like everybody that they cast looks exactly like I thought they would.
Yeah.
Even Littlefinger, like the little goatee and everything. I totally thought that's the way he was going
to
look.
I think Stannis is well cast in the show, though.
Okay. Okay.
I'm a Stannis guy. So.
I'm looking forward to checking that out. I've been going on and on about this Codex Alera series by Jim Butcher. I've been listening to that on audiobook. I'm now almost all the way through the fourth book called Captain's Fury. It continues to be really good. It's just this, it's this very big sweeping story of this. It's almost like kind of Luke Skywalker like, you know, where you got it's really more Luke Skywalker than Anakin Skywalker, I guess. Unless we find out at the end that Tavi of Calderon's evil or something, but where he starts off kind of in obscurity and then it's just the slow arc of building up to his full potential and who he really is and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really great story. And so I would again highly recommend that guy. And I'm through the third trade paperback of the Walking Dead comic book. And it is messed up, man. I mean, some messed up stuff in there.
I would agree with that.
But it's really well done, I think. So, are we done?
More geekery than games.
It was, yeah. I've been doing some iPad games. Been playing. I'm late to the game on iPad games. So things like Words with Friends that people have been playing on iPhone forever. I'm just now starting that. Hero Academy. That's a new one that just came out recently. I think that's. Mm-hmm. Kind of a turn-based little fantasy
strategy.
Reminds
me of Summoner
game.
Wars.
It is a little bit like that. Yeah, you're on like a grid, and you've got knights, and you know you're trying to destroy the other person's like some gem that's on their side of the board. And it's the animation's really cool on it. But that's it. I feel like I'm just stretching now.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Best move on.
Okay.
I'm drifting into deep water. I'm starting to care for you, and you're getting me in deep water. Be careful.
All right, it is time for Buy, Try, or Deny, where we're going to talk about the new hotness that is Lords of Waterdeep. Now, I approached this game originally with all skepticism possible because I'm just like, oh, it's just a crappy Euro game that Wizards is throwing on a Forgotten Realms theme. And we'll see how it works, you know. And I was almost personally offended because a lot of my early gaming in AD&D 2nd Edition was in Forgotten Realms. So I spent time in Waterdeep, man.
You hung out there.
I was a lifer, man.
Ooh.
That's right. So without further ado, we have Dungeons & Dragons, Lords of Waterdeep, a competitive board game of fantasy intrigue.
Doesn't that sound exciting?
John.
Okay. So this game is for 2 to 5 players, and
but could be expanded to 6 in the future.
Yeah, as we'll talk about in a second. But this.
Okay.
Oh, just
hey, you want to get in a fight now? Here at the end,
just back off. Okay. Drink out of your Disney World mug there.
It's tasty.
Okay. What are you drinking?
Mountain Dew.
Okay. I got Pepsi next. This stuff's pretty good.
It's fantastic. So about Lords of Waterdeep.
Oh, sorry. I'm just you know.
Jeez. Getting sloppy here at the end.
I'm stalling. I don't want it to end. So Lords of Waterdeep is, as Cody said, it's a Euro game that's produced by Wizards of the Coast in the Dungeons & Dragons Forgotten Realms world here. I don't think that they've ever done anything like this before that I can think of.
No, not this much of a Euro, no.
There have been like card, you know, like Three Dragon Andy's a card game that's kind of more of a traditional style card game. You know, there's been board games like Conquest of Nirath, which is kind of like dudes on a map.
Mm-hmm. The D&D Adventure Series games.
Right, which is very much like cooperative.
Dungeon D&D. Way back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But nothing like this.
This is the first time I've ever seen a game that it is just absolutely a Euro game with the requisite wooden cubes and wooden meeple-y looking guys. And so let's talk about it here. The idea of the game, it's basically a worker placement game. And what I've been told is that it's sort of like Kalis Light.
Yeah.
And I have not played Kalis. Sorry, Ryan Sturm, never played Kalis. But you know, so if, as I describe this, if you played Kalis, maybe you'll nod your head and say, oh, you're absolutely right. It's just like Kalis. But the idea is that you have your little workers, your agents, that are going to be going out to recruit different adventurers and to get money and different resources to be able to complete quests. The object of the game is to win. The way that you win is by having the most points at the end of 8 rounds in the game. And the way that you get points in this game, there's about 3 different ways. At the very end of the game, if you have leftover money, you'll get a point for every 2 money. These adventurers, which are represented by cubes, every one of those that you have left over, you get 1 point for those. And pretty much the rest of the points are going to be given to you by completing quests. In addition, you're also given a secret role card. It's your Lord of Waterdeep card that you represent. And that's going to, almost all of those cards except for one are going to give you additional points for every quest that you complete that's a particular type. And the different types of quests are things like warfare and skullduggery and arcana and things like commerce, you know. And so it'll say, you know, for every commerce and commerce or skullduggery quest, you get 4 additional points. So that's sort of a secret objective you can be going for during the game. The rest of the points are going to be just straight on what's on the quest cards for completing them. And so there's different locations around the board. You're going to start off, depending on the number of players, with between 2 and 4. They're meeples. I mean, they're just little agent-y looking.
But they're weird looking. They're like grown-up meeples, right? So they're
kind of stretched and tall. They don't have
their arms. Yeah, they're taller and their arms are kind of right down to their sides. And
yeah,
I don't know. I would almost prefer real, like, actual Carcassonian meeples.
I wonder if those are like copyright.
No, they're not.
They're not.
Can't be.
Okay. Well, anyway, so yeah, they're kind of tall, weird looking meeples. And around the board, there are different locations that you can go to. On your turn, you're just going to take one of your agents, your little meeples there, and throw it onto one of those locations, and then you will get the resource that is on that location. So in this game, the resources are cubes mainly, and those represent different kinds of adventurers. You have black cubes are rogues, purple are wizards, white are clerics, and orange are fighters. Mm-hmm. You also have money, and the money tokens in this game are very cool. They're little squares with a hole in them that represent 1 gold, and then they have these moon-shaped things with a hole in them that are, or maybe they don't have a hole in them. I can't remember.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, and they represent 5. So that really nice components there as far as the money goes. At the beginning of the game, you start off with 4 money, and if you're the start player, and then every player that going around the table from the start player gets 1 additional money. That's kind of your bonus for not going first. So, there might be a place where you go called the plinth, which if you put your guy there, you get 1 cleric, or you can go to where you can get 2 orange cubes. And so several of the locations on the board are just to get resources like that. Some of the other things that are interesting in the game is you have things called intrigue cards. And these are going to be the cards that this provides a little bit of the conflict in the game, which makes it atypical from your typical Euro game, in that you can play these cards to get resources. You can interact with other players. You can force them to give you things. You can give them an opportunity to trade with you or to give you things to get points and stuff like that. So there are spaces on the board that will allow you to pick up these intrigue cards. You start off the game with 2 of them, and then different spaces on the board you can draw more of them. There's even a special location on the board called the
Waterdeep Harbor.
Waterdeep Harbor, yep, where you can go to play intrigue cards. It's the only place where you can play intrigue cards. You put your meeple there, and then you can play an intrigue card. All of the spaces on the board, there's only room for 1 meeple, except for the Waterdeep Harbor, where there's a space for 3. And so, if you're looking for a particular resource, then it can be a really interesting dynamic to try to, you know, block other people or whatever, you know, to get the space that you want, or to prevent someone from getting the space that they want. There's a spot that will cause you to claim the start player token. So that can be really important if you really need an orange cube, you know, then, you can guarantee that you're going to get the first crack at that on the next turn. There's also a spot called the Cliffside Inn, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the rules in front of me, but that's where you get quests. And I take it back, that is the other location on the board where more than 1 person can go. There's 3 spaces there as well.
But each space is a little different in that one.
Right. So each one of those spaces, when you go there, you can grab one of the 4 face-up quest cards that are on the board. But one of the spaces, you can get the quest card and you get 2 money. Another space, you get the quest card and you can also get an intrigue card. And then the third space, you can, if you don't like any of the quests that are there, you can wipe all 4 of the quests, deal out 4 new ones, and then choose one of those. So, and these quests are pretty much going to be trading in a certain number and combination of cubes and or money and or other stuff that will give you some sort of a benefit. So I think this is where they tried their best to link the theme with the actual mechanics of the game.
Well, one of the neat thing is, yeah, it's like with the quests, you know, if it's a raid on Undermountain, for, you know, Undermountain's this gigantic kind of iconic dungeon that's under the great city of Waterdeep in the Forgotten Realms. So it requires not only a lot of cubes, but, you know, pretty much a fighters and clerics and things like that. Whereas if you have something to where it's, you know, heal the sick or stop the plague or something like that, that's very cleric heavy, yeah, things like that.
They even have one that's like you're healing some fallen soldiers or something like that. So it takes two clerics and a wizard to do that. And then the benefit that you get, or the prize that you get for doing that, is you get victory points plus you get six fighters, because those are the fighters that you healed.
And one of the neat little things that I don't know if a lot of people catch is that, you know, John was talking about these locations where you place your agent and just to get, you know, resources, just to get, you know, adventurers. The fighter and the rogue, you get two apiece, because those are kind of, you think of those as more everyman classes in D&D. You know, anyone can really be a fighter. Anyone can be a rogue with enough training. But when you put your agent on the cleric or wizard spaces, those only give you one, and those are rarer resources because clerics and wizards are more rare in the setting. So that was a nice little touch that I thought they didn't have to do. So.
Yeah, I thought that made a lot of sense. There's a space on the board that you just get four money for getting that space. And then at the very bottom, there is what's called the Builder's Hall, where there's one spot there where if you go there, you have an opportunity to build one of the three face-up building tiles that are placed there. There's a big stack of these guys, and you're going to put three out every turn. Well, you'll have three of them out. And then at the beginning of each round, you put these tokens that represent victory points onto them. So there's three of them in each round, and they'll just go onto each of the cards. So if no one buys, you know, card A and, you know, the first round, then the next round it's going to get another victory point on top of it. And eventually you'll get a whole pile of these on there, and it'll make it a sweeter deal to go in and try to buy those particular buildings. Now, what the buildings do for you is if you buy a building, you have to pay the cost in money to buy it, and then you're going to place it on one of the 10 blank building spots that are on the board. Once you do that, then you also have a little token that represents you or your player color, and it's sort of like a little puzzle piece thing that fits into the corner of the building.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of chiseled out and everything, where you slide that in there to show that it's your building. And what this does now is it creates another location that you can place an agent on a later turn. Well, it actually starts immediately, so later on that turn, someone could put a guy there. And these are things, various things that will give you different kinds of resources. It might allow you to trade resources. There are some that allow you to immediately complete a quest and get additional points for that. And the interesting thing is that if another person, like if I own a building and then Cody goes there and puts his guy on there, he'll get to do the action, get the resource from that building. And then at the bottom, it'll say owner gets another kind of a thing. So the owner of the building will get a benefit for someone using his building. This kind of reminds me a little bit of Lahav. That's sort of like that too, where you can buy buildings, and if people come and use those buildings, then they have to pay you in order to do that. It's
a great mechanic, because you'll always have what's in the city. You'll always have those base things, and then, you know, there's enough building tiles to where, and I think there's only like 10 building spaces that can be built on.
Right, yeah.
And so it guarantees a somewhat different game every time. And I love the idea of, you know, these buildings more often than not are better than what you'll get on the main board, but yeah, that's a cost because you're helping out your opponent in some way to use it. So that's a great mechanic. I like that.
Yeah, I like those too. So those, I think, are all of the spaces on the board there. And then the buildings, like I said, they do various different things. So you'll just go around and take turns putting your meeples, your agents down on the board and getting those resources. And then what's going to happen is that once all the agents have been placed, you're going to look back on that space that says Waterdeep Harbor. That's the place where you go to play your intrigue cards. And then there's going to be three different spaces there, and they may be completely full or might not be, but you'll go one at a time through there, one, two, three, and the person who, the meeples that have been placed there get to be picked up and then placed onto another location. So playing the intrigue card will, you know, it's sort of an intermediate place for your meeple to go, and then you can pick the agent up and put him somewhere else. It has to be someplace that's not occupied, and you can't put it back onto the right, the harbor and play another intrigue card. You can't do that. But so that's, I think, an interesting mechanic as well, that those guys get sort of a second run during a particular turn. One other thing I want to mention about the intrigue cards, and one of the more interesting gotcha elements in the game is
probably
the,
my favorite gotcha element.
The mandatory. Tell them about the mandatory quest.
All right, so the most of the intrigue cards are kind of in two camps. You know, the majority of them are just cards that let you do something, and usually they will allow your opponents to do something at a lesser cost. You know, may say take two cubes of your choice, pick an opponent, they get to pick one.
Yeah.
Or pick an opponent, you know, you get four coins, pick an opponent, they can pay you four coins to gain three victory points or something like that.
Yeah.
But my favorite one are the mandatory quest cards. So if you get this and you choose an opponent and you play it on them, and it is usually kind of a small quest. It's not an involved thing, but it's a quest they have to complete before they do any other quest. Now, and it's like I said, it's an easy quest to do, but it's a quest that doesn't grant a really big reward, and it causes your opponent to have to spend cubes on kind of a low income quest just to get it out of the way.
And maybe collect cubes that they weren't even interested in collecting. Like maybe they're working on a quest that doesn't even use a cleric. Now they got to spend a turn getting a cleric so they can do this stupid quest that only gets them 2 points.
It's not game breaking because, you know, it's so small quest, but it definitely, it's a big speed bump because, you know, with a limited amount of turns, and this is one of those games where it definitely feels like you don't have enough turns to complete what you want to do.
Right.
It was just a really fun element. I mean, I stymied you for a round or two just by giving you a pretty low level one. So.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's a different element from a typical Euro game. I think that really puts a little bit of an American style twist on it to have those mandatory quest cards in there. So that is pretty much the whole game. You play. One other thing to mention about quests is that there's a huge diversity of quests in this game. And so there might be quests where you only have to turn in maybe two or three cubes, and maybe you'll get two or three points or 4 points or something like that. Then there's some quests where maybe you have to turn in, like, I think I had one that was 9 fighters and 2 rogues, and that was worth 25 points. So you can either, you have the opportunity to complete a quest after every turn. Every time you place a meeple down, you can then complete a quest if you have the ability to do it from the quest that you have in front of you. You know, so it's you can either try to save up stuff over multiple turns to complete a big quest that's worth a whole lot of points, or you can try to do multiple quests that are worth smaller amounts of points. And I'm not sure which strategy works the best in that case, but probably a combination would be the best.
Yeah.
But then there's also things called plot quests. So in addition to getting your victory points and other benefits when you complete a quest, these are the kind of quests that you'll actually keep in front of you, and they will give you some sort of a benefit later in the game. So the game that Cody and I played recently, I had one where anytime you would take an action that would give you a black cube, I also would get 2 money as well. So that was it could be real beneficial as well. So
yeah, because you had a ton of money at the end.
I did, yeah. And like I said, at the end of the game, every 2 money is worth 1 victory point. And I think I had 20 gold at the end, so it was worth 10 points. So you just continue for 8 rounds doing this, and then you add up all the points from your quests. You add up any of the points from your Lord of Waterdeep card for the different kinds of quests that you've completed. 1 point for every unused cube, and 1 point for every 2 gold. Person with the most points is the winner. So, Cody.
Yes.
For the last time. On Game On with Cody and John.
Oh, geez.
Tell our listeners, including those 4 or 5 poor souls that decided to download this episode as their very first show.
A glorious ending. What is it? Oh. Yeah, I've been surprised just in the emails we received how many people picked up the show either at the beginning or during the final 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, man, I applaud you for sticking around.
Were we still in the upswing of popularity? Who knows? Yeah.
Who knows?
So tell them about the patent pending Game On with Cody and John by Triard and I review system.
It's going to be pending for a while.
That's right.
So by Triard and I, we're going to give you our buy points, try points, and deny points. Buy points are things we love about the game and that would make you want to run out and buy it right away. Try points are points about the game that we think will be good for some, not so good for others. And deny points are things that we think are abhorrent and just morally inferior about the game, you might say.
Right.
Or just things we didn't like.
An abomination of gaming. So buy points for Lords of Waterdeep.
Well, I mean, it's hard to break this down in multiple points. It's a fantastic worker placement game. I mean, it mixes the best things out of a lot of different games, and it packs it in a good playtime, I think. Not too short, not too long. I think there's enough turns to where you get to develop a strategy, but not so long as to, you know, you feel kind of rushed. You have to make decisions. Am I going to do this or am I going to do this? You know, decisions.
Right. Decisions. Eurogame.
Yeah, it's a great worker placement game with enough conflict and enough kind of variety to where I think it would woo some Ameritrash people. I mean, you're not chucking dice. It's not dudes on a map. No. But I think there's enough there to where it can really cross over and appeal to a lot more people. And this is probably the strongest thing I can say is, to me, this Jones theories out any other worker placement game in my collection. Boom.
Really?
There it is.
That's really? Right.
Yeah.
What about Alien Frontiers?
Well, okay. So, you know, Alien Frontiers is more, I guess, non-dice based.
Here come the buckets, listeners.
Here come the buckets. Like gun to my head, I couldn't pick right now.
Yeah,
I think over time, this might beat Alien Frontiers by a little bit.
Huh, okay.
But I think there's room for both because I do think completely dice based worker placement games are a little different.
That is different because where you can place the workers is different every time.
Yeah. Right.
Okay,
so
I see that
both are good games, but this I really like Stone Age, for example. I think that's a good worker placement game. I like Pillars of the Earth. I think that's a great worker placement game. This is much better.
Okay.
I think it's newbies can play it, veterans can play it. It's easy to get into, but there's enough depth to keep you coming back. So
I really think that's like it. Good. I think that's probably my biggest buy point for this game is ease of how to teach it. You know, any game that I can read the rules one time, or even in this game, I don't even think I read the rules. I had my buddy Greg taught me how to play, and then I was able to teach Cody how to play without even looking at the rules. It's, you know, it's that intuitive. It's very simple. You know, put your guy down, get your resources, you know, complete your quest, score some points. And so I think it's very accessible. I think that Wizards of the Coast really hit exactly the right level of complexity for this kind of a game. Because if they're going to come out with a game like, you know, with a Euro game, having never come out with one before, I think it's a brand new market. The people that buy Dungeons & Dragons and that buy Magic the Gathering and that recognize Wizard as a gaming company that makes those products, if they see a game come out, and, you know, a lot of people might just buy it no matter what, just because it's got water deep on it. You know, it's Forgotten Realms. Hey,
no, you'd be surprised
cool.
how many D&Ders will buy this.
Sure.
Sight unseen, you know?
Yep. And so I think it could be really disappointing and real bad if someone were to open this game up and find that it's the complexity of, you know, of a Stone Age. You know, this game is not as complex as Stone Age, I don't think.
Well, I don't know.
I think the scoring in Stone Age makes it irritatingly complex for a newbie.
Yeah,
Euro
sure. Stone Age may be a tick harder than this.
Yeah, because, you know, you're rolling the dice and you're having to divide, and then there's the cards where you have to get the multiples and everything. And so
math is hard.
It is. And so I think they'd really hit exactly the right level of complexity for this kind of a game. I think this can get new Euro gamers, potential Euro gamers, into the shallow end of the pool for this one. Plus, I think, though, that if you're a hardcore gamer and play a lot of heavy Euro games, this is a nice light one, I think, that you can really enjoy, especially, you know, if you enjoy your American-style D&D sort of theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one other buy point, I think we'd both agree on, the box insert.
It's one of the best ever.
Holy crap.
Yep.
That may be the best one I've ever seen.
Everything fits perfectly.
There are built-in little tubs for each of the resources.
Yeah.
So you don't even need little ramekins or little petri dishes or anything like that.
You might have not even noticed this, but I don't think I showed you this, that where the cards go, they're curved. It's curved in such a way that you don't have to like jam your finger down there to get the cards. You just push on one side of the cards and the other end pops up and you can just pull the deck
Stylish.
Of cards out. No
well
problem.
Done.
So
well done.
They did a good job there. Now moving on to try points, the box itself, not so sure about. It's a weirdly designed box. It's like the...
It's pretty.
It's pretty, but it's almost like the top and the bottom of the box don't quite come all the way together. It's it's sort of an illusion. It's, you know, the box.
It's supposed to look like a big book or something.
Yeah. But I'm worried already. I've only had the game for a few weeks about the top box. It looks like it's already starting to, you know, show a little bit of signs of warpage. So
yeah, I would actually. That was the only deny point for me.
Oh really?
I think you almost need to get one of those little, you know, those little Velcro little circles you can get.
Oh, uh huh.
I mean, if you're willing to do this, like you put one on the bottom and one on the top of the lip, and I'm doing a hand motion because that works on audio, and then it forces it from not warping and it makes it stay there.
Okay.
Or do something.
Something
I don't
like
know.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty, but it's not functional. It's like with such a good box insert, the box is kind of
But it's a clever idea, I guess. Yeah. But any like try points, anything in the that's middle of the road for this guy?
Yeah, the theme's not completely pasted on. We're not at like a Kanizia level
right.
pasted on, you know. It's, you know, it comes and goes. This could be done with any theme. I think
at its core, you're collecting colors of cubes and turning those cubes in for points.
Right, but I, you know, I normally that would be a deny, but it bumps it up to a try because, like I mentioned earlier, they really tried in some cases. You know, they made fighters and rogues more, or fighters and thieves or whatever, more common. They made, you know, the quests make sense as to what colors you need. You know, that
I agree.
They took an extra step there, so I could appreciate that. Try a point for theme. If you don't like D&D or anything or fantasy, like, don't be off put by it. I mean, I think you can still enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I've played D&D. I'm not familiar with Forgotten Realms at all, and it was fine. I mean, it's still, if you are, unless you're just completely put off by any sort of fantasy theme that mentions a wizard, a cleric, or a rogue, then this isn't going to be your game, I guess. But it's even kind of genericized there. They've got a bunch of names and everything that I'm sure if you know the D&D stuff, it's probably meaningful to you. But even if it's not, I don't think that. You'd be put off by it.
Yeah, I mean, I was giving John a lesson in the Forgotten Realms Pantheon because I read my Fates and Avatars book when I was in high school.
Yeah, well done. Yeah,
thank you. D&D Second Edition.
How were your grades?
They were good. Yeah. I was a great student.
I wasn't.
Really?
I was in high school, not in college.
It's too bad.
Yeah, science is hard.
It is hard.
Anyway, so overall thoughts for Lords of Waterdeep. If you were to give it, this is kind of old school.
Yeah.
If you were to give it a buy, try or deny rating yourself, what would you give it?
I'd give it a buy.
I would also give it a buy. Hey, way to go out on a positive note there. I think this is a really great game.
Me too.
Okay. That's it, man.
That's it.
That's the final review.
Yep. No one can buy any more games after this.
That's it. This is the last one. So go out and buy Lords of Waterdeep, though, because it's a good one.
Absolutely.
Hey Cody and John, this is David Schuth. I thought I'd write in and let you know I've enjoyed the time that you've been on the air, and I'm sorry to hear that you're not continuing. I think your podcast was enjoyable and a fresh look, especially since you went beyond board games and card games, and you do miniatures and role-playing and all other kinds of gaming. However, before you go, I would like to go on record and say I would hate to see what your painted miniatures actually look like, as you both oohed and awed, not only over the Stronghold Games new edition of Survive, but also on the Black Box edition of Glory to Rome. Seriously, guys? The best edition of Survive was Escape from Atlantis, the Schmidt Spiel version, 1988. You guys went on about how great it was that the different levels of the island were different millimeters of cardboard thickness. That's great, guys. Little stair steps of cardboard. Stupefying nonsense. You guys, there are four different sculpts for the four different monsters. There's a sculpt for the Atlanteans. There are four different sculpts for the four different land types. There's even two sculpts for the ships, one for the sails and one for the boat. You put it together, sail it around. This is certainly one of those times that you guys did miss the boat. Of course, if you'd like the opportunity to correct your record and sail straight from here on, you're certainly welcome to come over and play anytime. Or alternatively, you can attend SchuthCon 7.0 and play it then. Let's talk about the Black Box edition of Glory to Rome. Now, this is the reason that I'm actually writing in. I tell you, when I heard you guys talking about how nice the Black Box edition looks, I couldn't help myself. I just had to write in. I said, no, this has to be corrected. The Black Box edition is just very bleh. It's very Spartan. It's lacking. It doesn't have any flavor. It doesn't have any character. What is it? Have you guys seen the German version? Have you seen the Italian version? I mean, have you even seen the Polish version? And yet you say the Black Box edition looks great? Really? Guys, let's import this artwork, throw the English on it. It's going to be so much better. I love the gameplay of Glory to Rome, but the experience could be so much richer if I had something nice to look at while I waited for the next person to take their turn. For both of these games, I'm sending you a couple of pictures that you can post on your website if you want to show you how far off the art you are in these two instances. John, I wanted to give you a quick shout-out for the IndieCon game experience. I had a great time playing games with you, and you really did do a great job explaining the rules of Eclipse. Well done, sir. Lastly, I'd like to put in my entry for the Game On contest for the best Game On experience. My favorite Game On moment happens to be the time in the future when you guys report back on the RPG you've been developing set in the Twilight Imperium universe. Cody, I know you can take this one. Anyway, guys, thanks for all the time and effort that you've put in over the years. And yes, that is my own personal theme song.
Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it.
It's the big deal.
It is. The biggest.
The biggest.
The biggest deal.
The final deal. Or you final say final deal. A few more times, right?
Final. Last.
Final last. The ultimate.
The ultimate.
And, well, you know, we just want to wrap this whole thing up just by giving you our final top 11. And it's not a top 11 list of games. We, you know, did that back last fall.
It's one more.
It's, than it's 10. One more than 10, yes.
Tom and Eric.
But we're just going to give you our top 11 things that we loved about making Game On with Cody and John.
Yep.
And so it can be a little sentimental, I guess.
A little self-serving, but
a little
hey,
self-serving, hey. But you know, if you're still listening, you're probably going to at least listen to the end of this one, right? You know, don't quit now.
Yeah.
But we're just going to give you the top 11 things that we came up with that we just enjoyed about doing this show for the last nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
Why don't you start it off? These are not in any particular order. We're not going to count these down or anything. These are just 11 things. We couldn't. I'm not sure if we could really rank them.
No.
So.
I'd say the first one would be. I think it was cool for both of us to meet other gaming podcasters.
Yeah.
As odd as that sounds, you know, it's like we really got our inspiration from listening to other shows and thinking, you know, we might have a voice here.
Yeah.
So it was nice to not only meet other podcasters, but to become friends and you know, become equals with them, as crazy as that sounds, you know?
No, I know. And I can even think back to the year before we thought about making the show. So this would have been in 08 that we came up with the idea for the show. In 07, I was in... I was at Origins and I ran into, and I actually went up and made a point to go and introduce myself to Tom Vassell. Because mm-hmm. I, he was kind of this, you know, he still is the board gaming celebrity, I guess, right? And so I went up there and I had some kind of weird, benign question about like audio editing or something. I wanted to know something about what microphone he used or whatever. I just wanted to basically have an opportunity to talk to him.
Tin can on a string, sounds like.
Oh!
We get to do that.
It's better.
It's
now.
Better. It's better.
It's a good fine
job.
Show.
Good job, Eric.
Yeah, good job. So I went up and I just introduced myself. And just, you know, talked about, I just asked him whatever. I don't even remember what question I asked him, but I remember I was kind of starstruck at that point, you know, about, wow, this is the guy who does this show that I listen to all the time. And never thought that this many years later that I would, you know, consider Tom to be one of our friends, you know, and
absolutely.
When he comes into town for Gen Con, that we actually will get together and play some games and have a meal and have fun. So, you know, guys like, you know, Russ and Craig and Rafe from the D6 generation.
My older brother, Craig.
it's you in just a few years.
Yeah, it really is.
The folks from Myriad Games who developed great friendships with, you know, kind of funny. We've developed, I would say, an acquaintance with the guys from the Spiel, you know, and I've gone every year to their a Formula D tournament that they do. We never have really developed like a close friendship with those guys. You know, they kind of do their own thing and good on them, you know, but they kind of do their own thing. And we, you know, I always thought it was funny that we never really collaborated with them. Like they
probably won't even know we're gone.
No, they're like 20 miles up the road, but we just have never really done any joint podcasting stuff with them.
Big one for me was pretty recently actually when, Scott Nicholson came to Extra Life.
Yeah.
Because that was the first kind of board game podcaster show I ever watched. And, you know, we knew he was at MIT. I think he still is at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had sent him an invitation because, you know, it's somewhat close, about an hour away probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he said, oh, I'll try and make it or, you know, I'll see.
Yeah, we thought he was being polite, like, oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
We're like, you know. And then we pull up, and it's Scott freaking Nicholson talking to Eric, and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had a moment there. So uh-huh. It was like a little fanboy moment, so hi there. And it was good to see him.
So we got to hang out with him, and so the fact that these folks that we were fans of, all of a sudden we became peers of, mm-hmm. and friends with, that's just awesome.
Absolutely. You know?
So that was the number again, in no particular order, but the number one thing, other podcasters.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sarah.
And we're saying greetings and farewell from Myriad Games Presentations. It's been our pleasure to know Cody and John during their tenure as podcast hosts of The Common Gamer. And just like many Common Gamers, they got distracted by shiny bits of string and decided that they wanted to play something else.
Or they wanted to enjoy playing something.
Or they wanted to enjoy playing more games. So congrats on all the great episodes, and thanks for all the great games. And we'll look forward to continuing to hear you occasionally on various shows, and to see you at shows, and to play games with you whenever we see you at Extra Life or anywhere else.
And see you in the gaming capital of the world.
Yeah, I think they've actually lost the moniker of gaming capital of the world now. There's only one podcast, and I think we have it in New Hampshire now. They've relinquished their title.
But they still have Gen Con.
That's true, yeah.
We'll see if
we have PAX East.
That's true, and it's getting bigger and bigger by the year.
Oh. So thanks for all the great episodes. Thanks for listening, and have fun playing.
Tune in next week to hear Cody and John say... Oh.
Bye-bye, guys.
We'll see you at Gen Con.
So on the flip side of that coin, I think our number, our two thing, again, we're going to say this about 100 times, not in any order, but the second thing.
Second thing, number two.
Meeting listeners or having listeners come up to us, that never got old.
No.
And not because it's to stroke our egos or anything. It's kind of hard to imagine when we're sitting here in my game room, just the two of us and the cat, and we're just talking about games. And to think that, you know, I have had people come up to me at Gen Con, and we've been at other places and say, I love your show, thank you, I'm playing X because of you, I follow the Jones Theory now, I do this, I do that. Yeah. And it's just, I'm like, what? Why are you listening to me? I'm nobody, you know?
We've gotten so many emails as part of our contest, which, you know, keep listening if you have
the contest. Yeah, that's right. We have not forgotten.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten about that. But just folks who have just told us that they just feel like we're friends of theirs, you know, and we feel that way too. And if we ever run into us, you know, let's play games, you know, that's just a cool thing to think that there are folks all around the world that would count us friends of theirs as, you know, gaming friends. That's awesome. You know, that's especially for me, that's something that the fact that the internet exists in the way that it does and podcasting and iTunes and all the stuff that is come into fruition in the last 5 or 6 years that makes all this possible. You know, the fact that we can set up these microphones and I can do some editing and upload a file that gets broadcast out to the whole world is just mind-boggling.
The world is very small.
It is, yeah. And so just to see folks at conventions and to have, we've had people, you know, drive in, be on their way, you know, through taking road trips or something, and they'll stop in to play games with us.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's just really, it's really cool.
It still kind of blows my mind even talking about it. I'm just like,
yeah.
Really? Us?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've said it before, we totally mean it, that the listeners are one of the things that's made this show so much fun.
Hey guys, this is Matt from Vermont calling in to pay my, you know, do penance or homage or I don't know, whatever it is we're calling it these days. And to let you know, I'm really going to miss Game On with Cody and John. Now, I realize you don't know most of us folks who download your show. I mean, we're the listeners, you're the podcaster, and that's just how it works. But I think a lot of us felt like we knew you. And that's thanks to the easy way you guys broadcast yourselves a lot about that game stuff. I mean, right from the start, the show was like listening in on a couple friends chatting about board games, even if, you know, those friends were people most of us listeners had never met. So it's not the Jones Theory or the baseball show that made your podcast great. It was every couple weeks getting to hang out with Cody and John. So thanks, guys, for the terrific run.
All right, so the number three thing that we enjoyed about doing Game On with Cody and John is it's a very honest thing to say here.
That's right. We're the Common Gamer.
Common Gamer, just going to go ahead and put it out there. Getting free games is pretty fun.
I would put it as subsidizing our hobby.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it, yeah. So just the fact that we were able to develop relationships with a lot of different game publishers and designers to where they would, you know, they would provide us with product that we could then review and... You know, and there have been so many discussions on the internet on Board Game Geek about the relationship between podcasters and, you know, new media, mm-hmm. and you know, reviews and that kind of stuff, getting paid for reviews or not getting paid, and can you trust someone's opinion? I have no opinion about it. I have opinions about that. We don't need to talk about it, though. But, you know, we were provided with certain copies of games. At the same time, we bought an awful lot of bought hundreds of games, you know, that we have talked about on this show. So, but the fact that we were able to, like you said, subsidize what we're doing.
Press badges to conventions.
Press badges to conventions, yeah. That the fact that the work that we were putting into it, and it has been work. A lot of it has been a lot of fun, but also work. Yeah. That we were able to get some compensation for that. That was pretty cool.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think if we were to balance out everything, we still put in more money than we got out, if time is money, you know.
Without a doubt, we put in way more money than we got out of it.
But, you know, it was nice just to, you know, be able to go to Gen Con for free or things like that. I know this can't be fun to listen to. I don't know.
It's the last episode, though. That's like right. I said, if you don't like it, you can go ahead and turn it off now.
We had a Scrooge McDuck big pool full of money that we just dove into.
We did not.
Fantastic.
Hey, Cody and John. My name's Evan. I've listened to your podcast. Sadly, I found it right before you started your Final Five countdown. But I just wanted to give you my thanks for putting together your show. I think it's awesome. Sad that it's ending so soon after I found it, but, you know, that's how it goes. Yeah, just wanted to say you guys have an amazing format. It was really cool coming in at the very end, still knowing exactly what was going on and feeling oddly connected to you and you know, kind of sad that the show is ending, but in a very cool way. So, yeah, man, just wanted to put you up my thanks. And, yeah, driving back to New York and just finished listening to your last podcast. I thought I would give my thanks. All right, I hope you do enjoy the last couple episodes. I'll be listening and hope, you know, you find yourself in good fortune for the rest of your life. Thanks a lot. Bye.
So the fourth thing we want to talk about is, you know, in a lot of way, when we're saying, you know, listeners coming up to meet us, it was odd to have our message be so well received. Like, we talked about what I liked about our show and kind of, I think one of our hallmarks is being a common gamer type of show. We talked about like gamer culture and things like that. And it's interesting to see how many of those discussions have really affected people and how, you know, again, not trying to stroke my own ego here, but I can't believe the Jones Theory got as far as it did. That's just something I did with my
Neither
own collection.
Neither can I. Jeez.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, that was great. When we did that episode on the Jones Theory, you know, it was something we had talked about for a while.
I thought it would
while.
Be panned. I thought people would just be like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And certainly there are a lot of people who've said it's a stupid theory.
It definitely has taken off to where you were able to take something that I think was on a lot of people's minds and maybe something that was even already in use by certain people, and you gave it a name, you know? And so I think it's something that...
Well, thank goodness I have a rare and unique last name.
That's right. You're not the Wojciechowski theory right. or anything like that. So, but yes, just the fact that we had a message, you know, I mean, it wasn't like we were preaching or anything, but just that, you know, we had some a voice, you know, that we had things that we said that were maybe hopefully a little bit different from what everyone else was saying, and that was so well received. We got a lot of good feedback on the Jones Theory, on the common gamer thing, on, you know, on the top 11. I think the fact that we did that, people like that. So, so a well received message.
Hey there, Cody and John. This is Trent Howe with the Board Game Family, and we are sorry to hear that you guys are going off the air. You guys have been fantastic to listen to. I don't recall when I started listening to your show, but it's been a couple of years, and I have just enjoyed your style. You guys are down to earth, and you can tell that you just love games. You guys make a fantastic duo. I also love your throwing convention out the window and going with a top 11 list. And I'll tell you what, even though you guys are going off the air, the Jones Theory will live on in infamy. But my favorite memory, hands down, is from a year and a half ago when I was heading to Indianapolis for a business trip, and I dropped you a line to see if I could get a chance to meet you guys and perhaps play a game or two, and you were just so welcoming. And then when I found out that the only day that I could meet happened to fall on your birthday, John, I'll say I felt a little sheepish, but you said by all means to come on by, and I'm so glad that I did. You opened your home to me and welcomed me with open arms to play some great games. It was the first time I'd played Zombie Dice and Alien Frontiers, and you guys were just great to play with. And even though it's sad to see you're ending your show because we loved it so much, I'm so glad you're doing it on your own terms and based on your priorities. It's just like the way you've done with the show all along. You guys are a class act, and it's good to see that you're ending the same way. And from us here at the Board Game Family, we truly wish you the best.
The number five thing we want to talk, and thank you, Trent, for that message.
Yeah,
we appreciate that.
You need to come back to India, or we need to go to Utah.
Did you know I used to live in Utah?
Did you?
I'm not even sure Trent knows that. Yeah. When I was 6 years old, my dad changed jobs, and we moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and lived there for 6 months.
Huh.
And then my dad didn't like the job there, and he got his old job back. We moved back to Virginia.
I've not been any farther west than Omaha, Nebraska, so that tells
really?
You how well-traveled I am. Yeah.
Wow. Are you still have plans for PAX Prime this year? Is that a possibility?
I would like to go, maybe not this year, but sometime in the future. I think it would be fun.
Seattle sounds cool.
I would like to go to Seattle. I mean, I'd like to go to Utah, you know? This is like, I don't mind. It's farther away than Omaha.
Yeah.
But anyway, geography on.
Sorry, yeah. So the number five thing is one event that we got to do twice that was just a whole lot of fun. And we, of course,
Hopefully
more in the future. And we brought you coverage of it both times, and that's Extra Life. It's a great charity where, you know, we play games for 24 hours to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network of Hospitals. So a great charity to play games and heal kids. And so we had the opportunity for 2 years to actually fly up to New Hampshire to
live free or die.
To the mothership at Myriad Games and play games there. Again, this goes all along with meeting listeners and other podcasters as well, that we got to hang out with those great folks in New Hampshire. I actually have, I feel, a group of close acquaintances, at least, you know, and gaming friends in New Hampshire of all places.
Know.
You know, I mean, I never would have thought I would have even had any reason to go to New Hampshire. Not that New Hampshire's not a fine state, but I don't have any reason to go to Idaho. But, you know, if there had been a podcaster there, maybe I would have gone there, you know.
Maybe.
So that was a whole lot of fun. And we got to raise a lot of great money for the charity. And
we got to meet Chuck Robinson.
Chuck Robinson, the owner of the greatest New England accent ever.
Your award is on its way.
Okay.
Oh, sure. You guys claim that you're closing the podcast down just because it's the time. But we all know what really happened. You guys got bought out by Leo Laporte. He wanted to make sure that he had the only Game On podcast. So enjoy your hard-earned millions of internet dollars. Well played, gentlemen. Well said. Now, seriously, thanks for all the fun. It's been great, and sorry to see you guys go. This is Daryl. Bye-bye.
For number six, this was one that I guess I kind of threw in there a little bit more than Cody, because this deals with my part of the show. Because
he did more work on the show than I did.
Not necessarily.
No, but you did.
Okay, well, maybe more hands-on work, but and that is, we'll call it like honing our craft, you know, that one of the reasons why I got into podcasting is because I really enjoyed audio production. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I'm the sound guy at my church. And so I'm used to setting up sound equipment and running sound and things like that. And so getting to edit the show was always a lot of fun for me. And so, you know, over the course of 82 episodes, you know, all the little musical interludes that we've done, which, you know, may or may not have been royalty free at all times, you know, but we tried to.
That's the real reason we're shutting down.
But no, it's not. It's not. But we, you know,
stacks of cease and desist letters, stacks of them.
No, but I tried to add a little bit of a spice and flavor, some interesting little, you know, musical elements and TV show clips and that kind of stuff that would make it fun. And it was fun for me to put those things in there and to search for those things. So editing the show and just getting better at that. And I feel like over three or four years, I've streamlined it to the where it just doesn't take nearly as long to edit. That kind of stuff. So
I'm going to do you one better. All we right. are one of the best sounding and best edited podcasts out there. So
you
there
so?
You go. Oh yeah.
All right.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Boom. From the first episode, because I know we made it a point and you spent hours on that first episode to make it sound good and not sound like we were in a tin can.
Yeah. It probably sounds worse now than it did at the very beginning.
It probably
beginning,
does, but we're still at a pretty high level and I have nothing to do with that. So yay, John.
Thanks, man.
Hey, Cody and John, it's Russ.
And Craig.
And HD.
Look, Rafe's back in the house just to say goodbye to you guys.
That's right.
Right.
So thank you so much for all the wonderful years of Game On Podcast with Cody and John.
Try, buy, or deny.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I know,
buy,
right?
Try or deny.
I would have bought it, but now I'm being denied it. It's going
that's
away.
That's right. That's what I was. That's where I was
little
going.
A little sad. Not going
to
lie.
I'm going to miss buy, try, or deny.
Well, I actually got a call from a long-lost gaming friend, and he said he was very sad because he heard about the podcast going off the air, and it was one of his prime listens.
I know. all of our friends listen to the show, and it's a bummer that it's going away. But we understand, you know, we of all people know how much time goes into this, so we totally understand.
Yeah, I understand.
You know who really understands? Rafe.
Yes, Rafe. Oh, yeah. Me.
So,
me. I have some fond memories I want to share,
yeah,
though.
Go ahead. What's your favorite memory?
All right. So I have two fond memories. My one fond memory is how we started to bust on them, like the Nickelodeon shows. I can't even remember what we used to. Like, there was a Nickelodeon show that was Cody and somebody or other.
Oh, Zach and Cody for a...
Oh, yeah. That's it. Zach
Disney,
and Cody.
Disney,
yes.
I think it is.
Yes. So that was fun. It was fun. But we didn't really even know them that bad. We didn't even know them. They hadn't come out to Myriad yet. We hadn't met them at any gaming conventions. And we kind of just started this rivalry. And it just goes to their character and their humor. And they just kept it right in stride and, you know, joked right back at us. And I thought that was awesome.
I loved actually meeting them and playing games with them, and I would say they are amongst the most fun people I know to play games with. I have never sat down to play a game with those guys and not had a blast.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And that includes teaching them how to play Dystopian Wars.
Nice.
Which was a very not half-hearted, but they seemed very hesitant.
No, it's awesome.
It's just always a blast to be across the table from them, especially when they're grabbing at each other's. Well, never mind.
Yep. That's a famous moment.
It's a blast. And, you know, Cody and John definitely made Gen Con even that much more fun.
Oh, absolutely.
They help us get around there. It's been so great. All the years we go there, they help us with getting us into True Dungeon. I don't think I would have tried True Dungeon if it wasn't for you guys. Really appreciate that. And now going to play with you guys is one of the highlights of the con. And so I think my favorite memory of the whole Game On podcast is getting to meet you guys and know you guys and consider you friends. We're looking forward to still seeing you at the cons, and I hope you still come up to New Hampshire once in a while for these wacky gaming events as well.
Actually, it's funny you should mention that. In my head, I've been like, why am I not more upset? And I know now because what you just said. Because they're from Indianapolis, so we'll still see them.
Yeah, right. That's the good news.
So
right.
I was like, why am I not more? Oh, because they're not like going away for us. So I can only imagine you poor sods who, you know, they'll just go away for you.
Oh, it's so funny you say that, Craig, because I think of them going off the air and I get sad. And I'm like, wait, they're not dead. I'll still get to see them at Gen Con. They'll still be the same people. Right.
And
still
hopefully
be fun hang out with.
Hopefully they'll come out, like Russ said, every now and then. And
Yeah, that too. Well, that was one of my second most favorite memories is I think this was the second Gen Con that after I met John, and we're playing a game, and it's with Jeff Engelstein, and we're playing some sort of fireman themed game, and for whatever reason I had totally gotten into the matrix of playing, and I was just like smoking this game, pun intended. I was kicking butt, taking names, and what's that term, Russ? Grokked it or something?
Yes, you grokked the game.
Yeah,
you got it.
And John, the whole time, he's like, oh, yeah, that's great. This is a great game. Oh, yeah, you got to do that. And that total Midwestern, like, flat humor. And I didn't know if he was joshing me or what he was doing, but it was so funny. He hated that game. And I thought he loved Euro games, but he was like, that game was horrible. I hated it.
Yeah, if you ever have a chance to get Cody and John at the same table with you, it's a blast because they're funny to watch.
I don't think I've ever had that.
They don't look like they're having as much fun.
No, that's the best part. You can't really tell if they're
like
funny.
You will.
Right. And Cody, I'm a little concerned about the gaming community though, because with you stepping down now as a regular podcaster, who's going to defend the honor of Talisman? No one. I think you're the only podcaster I know who actually defends that game. So I'm a little nervous about the Talisman cred now with you stepping down there, Tony.
I'm going to miss GM Academy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Do GM Academy.
Yeah. Right. So, guys, we look forward to seeing you again at the con, and we're sorry to see you leaving the podcast, but thanks for all the great memories, all the great episodes.
And all the help and all the good times.
Indeed. And remember, there's always a third chair open.
Well, I was just
here.
About to say, would there one is. Of those guys want to be a semi-permanent third chair? Or?
Yeah, well, we're always happy to have him back on.
The whole point is to take a break, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Take a break.
Let's end on a Rafe note.
Right, there you go.
Bye, guys. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, bye, guys.
You know, one of the things that that came kind of later in the Game On life cycle, and I'm glad it really came on, was thanks to our good buddy Sean Johnson here locally. We got the Game On Game Night started.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the name will change. Part of me kind of hopes it stays the same just to keep a little bit of the Game On legacy alive.
But if it doesn't, it's okay.
But if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So we have, as we've talked about before, and the people who don't like hearing about local stuff tune out now, we have a bi-weekly game night here on the west side of Indianapolis. We have you know, kind of biannual game days where it's a big, you know, all day thing. And we're blessed to have a nice space to do it in, and we have a great turnout. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I would game with my group. We, John and I would game. We'd call some mutual friends. That would be fun. But this is nice because you can meet new people. You can play new games. And I'm finally glad we got it started. So the Game On Game Night, maybe one of my favorite things that came out of the show. A bit selfish, but hey.
No, I completely agree. And because it's something that I think that Sean, you know, had always kind of dreamed of doing. And the fact that even now, last game night we had, what, between 15, 20 people. Yeah. I mean, it's we've got a core group of folks that show up every time now, and that's awesome. Yep. You know, awesome to make those friends. So, yeah, Game On Game Night.
Hey, Cody and John. This is Matt Nuttleman from Lincoln, Nebraska. Just heard your show today that you are hanging it up and no longer releasing new episodes after the next four. Just wanted to say appreciate everything you've done with the show. I've always enjoyed listening to it. I think you guys are a lot of fun to listen to. Enjoyed your banter and just the way you went about everything. But I'm also really happy for you guys that you're going to get some more time to enjoy your family and friends and hopefully a lot of good games. So thanks again for all you've done. Looking forward to the next few shows, and we'll hopefully see you around on the Geek and other places. So thanks a lot. Bye.
You know, one thing that came out of this show that...
This is number 8, by the way.
Number 8.
Yeah, if you're keeping track at home.
If you're keeping track. I would say our gaming horizons have really been broadened.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's... I think going into it, we never would have thought about playing a miniatures game.
Nope.
And here we've played one, and we might start another one, or we might switch to a different one.
We painted one that we didn't play at all.
We did.
Dystopian Wars.
We did. You know, we did things like diplomacy that we'd only talked about and heard stories about, but we never did anything with it.
Yeah.
You know, we did that, and I think this show was a catalyst for it. I don't think we would have done a miniatures thing without that. Well, what if we talked about it on the show? Because I bet there are other people who think like that.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, it was nice because it pushed us out of our comfort zone a little bit and forced us to try other games. Some we liked, some we didn't, but we got to try it, and it was an experience. And we did it.
I think a good example is the episode where we did a review of Deadlands, the role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And that was one where we didn't do very many buy, try, or deny segments on role-playing games. But that was one where we specifically wanted to check it out. And it gave us the excuse to get a group of folks together. And I think several of them had never played a role-playing game before. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we got to sit and do that. And that was a new experience. And just because we wanted to do it on the show. So we did have a lot of things where it started out as, this would make a pretty interesting episode, or, you know, we could talk about this on the show, and, you know, here's a cool idea. And that was, and so I think that's really helped us a whole lot. So I agree. Broaden horizons.
Yeah.
New directions.
Oh no.
Hey, Cody and John, this is Jeff Engelstein from the Ludology and Dice Tower podcast. And I just wanted to really thank you guys for all of your years of effort with putting on the Game On podcast. It was always one that I really enjoyed listening to. One of the things that I really loved about the show is even before I met you in person, I really felt like I knew you. I felt like you were really friends, and that, you know, listening to the show was just like sitting around at a table talking about games. And so it was always fun for me, and especially a treat to really get to meet you in person and find out that you were perhaps even nicer in person than you presented yourselves during your show. I do find it a little bit of a coincidence that two big institutions in Indianapolis are leaving at the same time, both Peyton Manning and your show. I'm still partially convinced that either one or both of you combined actually are Peyton Manning in real life, and expect to see one of you perhaps show up in Denver, but time will remain to be seen on that. But anyway, thanks so much for all the effort that you put into Game On. And I look forward to seeing you guys in the future. And if any of the listeners from Game On are looking to fill that now large void in their lives, feel free to pop on over and listen to us on Ludology or the Dice Tower. Thanks again.
So number 9, one of the things along with the Jones theory that got bandied about an awful lot in this show, it was the idea and the truth, I would say. Yeah, that Indianapolis, Indiana is the gaming capital of the world.
Without a doubt.
We firmly believe that. It started out as kind of a joke, I guess, you know, or a catchy thing to say, you know, from the very beginning. I think that was,
yeah.
I think we said that in the very first show, right?
I think we did.
We just kind of made that up, I guess. But the truth is that we really do believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, we really do believe that Indianapolis has more to offer in the realm of gaming than other cities do. We're, of course, horribly biased, but we've got Gen Con. We've got a few things, I think, that you know can a ton of
gamers per capita, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. And the number of game groups that exist and everything. I mean, wherever you live, if gaming is big where you live, bully, you know. Yeah. But we just really believe that. So we've really enjoyed being what we would call like ambassadors to the gaming capital of the world. So because Gen Con's here, whenever folks come into town, as other podcasters especially, you know, we love being able to kind of show them around our city. We're very proud of where we live, show them great places to eat, fun places to go, and of course all the stuff gaming-wise that the city has to offer. And also, I think we were able to provide an interesting perspective on Gen Con when we did our, you know, Gen Con preview episodes and things like that, you know, because of the fact that, you know, we're from the city and we could, you know, really provide coverage that I think maybe other podcasts couldn't quite provide, you know.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge homer for Indianapolis and the state of Indiana, because I'm a lifelong Hoosier. If God willing, I'm going to be here my whole life. I love it here. And it's just nice to see that other people, you know, who come here for Gen Con and other gaming events, they really see how nice it is. That's what's great about the Super Bowl when it was here. So many people said so many nice things. And, you know, if you're a gamer, this is the place to be.
Yep.
So go ahead and move. Rates are reasonable.
That's right. So it's a great place to live in. Yeah, and inexpensive. And you don't have to take our word for it.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Well, that is what we say for things that are great accomplishments.
Ah, congratulations, they're leaving?
I remember very distinctly.
They made it out? What are we cheering? I don't get it.
Oh, I see. Well, we're cheering for the wonderfulness that is the Game On podcast.
There we go. Oh, hi. By the way, I'm Eric Summerer, and that's Tom Vassell.
From the Dice Tower. And we will try to be nicer on our clip than they were on our show, on their clip.
Well, oh, they were funny.
Oh,
calm down.
Now, listen, no, I'm calm, but I want to say that when Cody and John first came on the air, I didn't really know who they were. I thought, oh, it's another group of two guys doing a podcast. There had been me and Joe, and there was the spiel, and I didn't think much about it. But as time went by, I would listen to them occasionally, and I found that it was by far the most engaging podcast that I listened to. About board games. I really enjoyed it to the point where I really looked forward to seeing their next podcast. Other podcasts I let sit 4 or 5 episodes deep, but I would make sure I listened to a new Cody and John.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they present themselves as the everyman podcast, the common gamer podcast, but I think in the process, they were able to produce one of the most professional relationships on the podcast that I've heard, and one of my favorite podcasts out there.
Yeah, I never technically agreed with the common gamer, because I always thought they were uncommon gamers. They were fun, fairly knowledgeable. They used grammar that was far superior to most other podcasts. They were the superior gamer. They were the uncommon gamer.
What I really loved is the interaction between Cody and John. I mean, that kind of thing was so effortless and entertaining. It's the kind of thing that it takes us hours and very expensive post-production to do for our show. and they just, it just happens with them, and I'm just constantly impressed.
Well, we do wish them well in their future endeavors. I'm very sad to have a hole in my queue of listening to podcasts. I always wanted Cody and John to join the Dice Tower Network. They were always my first choice.
don't tell Sturm that.
But we met them in person. I consider them friends. I will never forget their efforts to help bring me back to America. I appreciate that. We appreciate their friendship. And I have to say that Cody is absolutely correct in that Indianapolis is the gaming capital of the world.
What? You admit it now?
I admit it. I also will say that the Jones Theory, I almost 100% agree with it. There are some instances where I don't, but I do think it's a good theory and one that more people should follow.
You know what I love about this particular segment is that we're treating it like it's a funeral. We haven't directly addressed them at all. We're referring to them as if they've gone somewhere. Hey, Cody. Hi, John. How are you? We're not pretending you're not in the room. It's been a pleasure listening to you guys, and it is a pleasure to call you two friends. And I hope that we get to hear you somewhere in the near future.
And this is our public invitation. Anytime you guys want, we'll have you on the Dice Tower.
Yeah, you can sit in for Tom.
That was one of our best shows when you guys came on, and we appreciate it. We appreciate everything you've done for gaming, and we appreciate you guys as friends. Congratulations.
Now, kind of on the flip side
Tom admitted it.
He did.
He admitted it.
So
we got it down on
his
audio.
Word is gospel to some folks.
That's right. Indianapolis Gaming Capital of the World. Boom. Okay, sorry, moving on. Number 10.
You know, on the flip side of broadening horizons is that I really feel that both of our gaming tastes have really been refined. I think, you know, yeah, we've tried new things, but I think we really now, we know what we like, we know what we don't like.
We're like fine wine connoisseurs, right?
That's right. We are the game sommelier, or you know, Spiel just sued us.
I'm afraid that
another cease and desist on the file.
Our podcast.
But you know, it's kind of like miniatures games is a good example. You know, we play them, but I think we both agree that's not our first slot.
No,
we're
not.
You know, we
for
like
either of us,
we'll play it maybe once a month, and that's about it. And it's, you know, especially in other games, I am more receptive to Euros than when we started the show. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't touch a Euro with a 10-foot pole, and now I will play games like, you know, Lords of Waterdeep, and I'll play even more Euro stuff than that, and more often than not, I'll probably find it acceptable at least, you know?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say I was hostile towards RPGs, but my RPG tastes were probably a little bit more narrow, and just being able to play in some different campaigns and some stuff. Cody's really helped me to understand some other systems, and that's really helped to broaden my horizons as well. And I've sort of figured out what kind of RPGs I like, what systems I like, which ones I don't, you know, what I like and don't like about GMing and stuff like that. So yeah, I feel like we're better gamers for having done this. You know?
Yeah.
Better meaning, you know, just more...
We have time. We got our time served. We're good.
Exactly.
and now, as we go into our last thing, we have a message from the best of the podcast has-beens, I would say.
Has-beens?
Or legends.
Legends. There we go. Legends. So, yeah, listen to this.
Dear Cody and John, we recently received your application to join the Board Game Podcasters Retirement Home, and we wanted to congratulate you and let you know that with the announcements you've been making of your final 5 episodes, that we are happy to prepare a space for you. We're going to be putting you over in the Rick Thornquist wing, and we'll be able to provide you a place of comfort and solace to help you live out the remaining years of your life. One thing you will be getting is a good dose of Don't Care at All, which is a nice drug that will help you forget about the excitement that you felt for these new releases. Soon, Essen will come around and you will just say, well, I don't care what's coming out. And that's the drug Don't Care at All helping you get through those withdrawal symptoms that you will face as you resign as members of the Cult of the New. I think you're going to find that once the Don't Care at All settles in, you're going to enjoy not having that pressure of feeling that you need to keep up with what's coming out, that you can just play Talisman, that you can just go jogging, that you can just do whatever you want. It actually sounds like, from the advice you gave on your last episode, that perhaps you've already snuck some illegal Mexican Don't Care at All to help you deal with this change in your lifestyle. You're going to find that those publishers who have been so happy to provide you with review copies of games you want to play and many, many more review copies of games that you have no interest in playing, well, they're going to forget you quite quickly. You will find that your box will stop of overflowing with free games, and you'll actually be quite happy about that because then you don't have to deal with places to put the things. And when it comes time for game night, you can just enjoy playing a game that you already know instead of feeling guilty because there's 27 games that you need to read the rules on and get to the table. You'll also find that your Jones theory is actually going to change and adjust, and somehow your collection will get smaller and smaller. You'll find that things a year ago which were Jones theory compliant all of a sudden, well, really aren't that important anymore. So we welcome you here. You can tell your fans that the best way for them to thank you is a large cash donation to the Board Game Podcasters Retirement Home. This allows us to keep the Board Game Podcasters happy after they have been through the trying times in providing board game news. You know, I do remember fondly the days when you started your podcast, when you started the podcast that you were going to be the common gamer. And I chuckled at that, knowing how the whirlwind of board game podcasting fame was going to sweep you up and carry you along. And before you knew it, you'd be getting review copies and being guests at fundraising events and conferences and organizing your own things. And then someday you're going to step back and say, what are we doing? The final thing that you can tell your fans out there is, rather than be sad that you're gone, how about they find inspiration in your work and start their own podcast for the common gamer? There's always good to have more voices coming in, more people who have that enthusiasm, that can share that enthusiasm with others. And of course, in 5 years or so, more bodies to fill the beds of the Board Game Podcasters Retirement Home. So I look forward to greeting you all with open arms and a game of Talisman ready to play. Take care and bye-bye.
And so here we are at number 11.
It's one more than 10.
One more than 10, yeah.
if we haven't run that joke in the ground.
And if, you know, I guess we got to end on what might seem like a little bit of a sappy note here, but it's really the truth. And when we were putting this list together, we both agreed that probably the best thing about doing this podcast is that it has really helped to strengthen our friendship. Don't call it that.
No, okay.
But yeah, Cody and I've only known each other for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, we're gaming friends from back in school or whatever. You know, we met through a Gen Con, kind of a meetup group. And, so, you know, this is something that from just a couple years after we met, we started doing this. And I really have, over the past 6 years, you know, come to really just love Cody as my I use that word, I know. But no, Cody's really my best friend, other than my wife. You know, he's my best guy friend that I do stuff with. And so we talk about games on this show, but when we don't have the microphones on, we talk about all kinds of things, and we really share our lives together. I introduced, basically fixed up Cody and his wife, you know,
yep.
On the first date there. So, you know, and I was best man at his wedding, and, you know, and he's been here to see my kids grow up, you know, as they've gotten older and everything. So that's been for me, the best part about doing this show is just getting to hang out with my best friend and do stuff with him.
Right back at you, bud.
That's all you got?
Well, you did it very well. I'm getting a little misty over here.
Oh, okay. It's all right. Take a sip of your Mountain Dew. It's all right. So there you go. The top 11 things that we loved about making Game On with Cody and John, you know?
What do you say we close out the show, Jack?
No, wait. We got the contest.
Oh, yes.
You want to do that next?
I suppose.
All right, so it's the final contest.
Final.
The final. The last one. And if you remember that we asked you to either write or send us a voicemail with your favorite moment from Game On, and we got a whole bunch of too many to read.
Yeah, we had 10.
We could have had like two or three episodes of just your comments. We really appreciate it. We really cherish those personally. We're probably going to print them out and put them in like a book or something keep.
So that I can show my kids that back in the day, people listened to what
I said.
Do you
think your dad's a failure? Well, I did this.
I was the king of the nerds.
That's right. So we really do appreciate all of those great comments. But it's time to pick our winner what's the prize?
$200 American dollar gift certificate to Myriad Games, your friendly professional game store.
Woo, $200.
200 smackaroos.
I should have entered.
You should have.
So now it's time we have put all of our your names into the big proverbial random.org hat, and we have drawn one out. And so the winner of the final Game On with Cody and John contest for $200 in Myriad of Myriad money, I guess.
That's right.
And that goes to
Doug Hittle.
All right, Doug. Woo.
Well done. And we should read his email.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's short but sweet. One of my favorite episodes was when you reviewed Warhammer 40K. I've never played it myself and likely never will due to not having friends with similar gaming interests, but it was fun to hear you go through the exploration of the game, and I vicariously lived it through you two. Your podcast will be missed, and I wish you the best. So thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug. Yeah, interesting that you mentioned that, because we're actually in the process of getting ready to fire up some 40K again.
God help us.
It had been a while, but I think we're going to I'm going to do orcs.
So I'm going to do Space Marines.
Okay.
Storm Wardens chapter all the way.
I saw the first one that you painted. It looks good.
Thank you.
It's very nice.
So, Doug, if you want to email the Game On Inbox.
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Actually, probably just email us would be best. Flo's already...
Flo's already gone out the door. I'm sorry.
And we will get things all taken care of.
That's right. So congratulations to Doug, and thanks again for all of your great support and entries to all of our contests over the last 3.5 years. We really appreciate it.
And now, what do you say we close out the show, Jack?
I say we do it.
Well, that wraps up the final episode. I have to say final one more
time.
The last hoorah of Game On with Cody and John.
What more is there to be said?
That's right. You know, this is our last chance to address the gaming masses while we have this great platform.
I'm not sure if I really have anything else to say other than I've had a blast doing this. I couldn't have asked for a better co-host, and you know, we're just looking forward to, you know, getting to playing more games and just hanging out and doing all the stuff we've done before, just, you know, without being in front of microphones.
That's right. The road goes ever on and on. That's and right. You know, play more games, play fun games, whatever you determine to be fun.
That's right.
Play an RPG now and then, it won't kill you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, we just say God bless you. It's without you guys, we're just two guys, two hicks sitting in a room talking about games. So we thank you so much for listening, whether it's for one episode or for 82.
We do. It's been a great ride.
Yep. So until we meet again, game on.
Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Hey, welcome to the first episode of Game On with Cody and John. This is a podcast about all kinds of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, from two guys who just absolutely love to play games. And we're coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, which we have declared to be
the gaming capital of the world. I mean, obviously.
Absolutely.
We've got Gen Con, and we're here. So that's good enough for me.
You know, it seems like it's a pretty good combination. And so we just want to talk to you real quickly about some of the segments that you're going to see every episode of.